You're listening to the ESO Network, your station for all things geek.
Live from Chicken Town, this is the Flopcast, episode 427.
On flopcast.net.
Yes, yes, hello, Cornflake.
Hi, Kevin. What's new?
Ready for more flop fighting?
Oh, you know it.
Part two of our Lilith Fair-themed flop fight tournament that we started last week. This will be fun. We're going to get through it somehow together. But first, you know, let's start with you and National Whatever Day.
National Whatever Day this week, Kevin, is a celebrity birthday, and it is the birthday of one Sir Patrick Stewart, who turns 80 on July 13th.
80, wow.
80 years old on July 13th, probably best known for his depiction of Jean-Luc Picard in Star Trek The Next Generation, and more recently, Star Trek Picard.
Which you saw, right? You saw Picard?
Yeah, I loved it. I grew to love it. So, yeah, I came around to the other side, although it was darker than The Next Generation as I remember it. It ended up being a great story. But did you realize that since late March, most days, Patrick Stewart has been doing a sonnet a day on like Twitter?
I was not aware of this, no.
Yes. One of William Shakespeare's sonnets a day. He's been doing that ever since the quarantine started.
That sounds about right. Yeah. I have not been doing that. But
no.
If you had to choose between me or Patrick Stewart, I think we went the right way on that one.
Also, of course, known for Professor Charles Xavier from the X-Men superhero movies.
Professor X.
Professor X, indeed.
He was excellent on Saturday Night Live many years ago.
Oh, I know what you're going to talk about.
The highlight of which, of course, Love Boat, The Next Generation.
Oh, that's not what I thought you were going to talk about.
What in the world did you think I was going to talk about?
I thought you were going to mention Sexy Cakes.
I do remember Sexy Cakes, but we're not talking about it. But what that is really, really funny, though. And again, it speaks to what a great actor he was. Even doing something completely ridiculous, he was really acting, if you watch that ridiculous sketch. But come on, Love Boat, The Next Generation. Right. Which, there's a costume group at Dragon Con that does Love Boat, The Next Generation costumes. You know, it's the Star Trek, The Next Generation and Love Boat hybridized into one magical combo outfit. They're wearing like the shorts, yeah. Like captain's cap, and Isaac the bartender has the visor like Geordi. That was outstanding. Probably the best thing he ever did was host SNL.
And since we have some 90s themed shows underway, he also won a Grammy in the 90s. Did you know that?
A Grammy Award? No. He was a member of Belle Biv DeVoe for a couple of years, wasn't he?
Yeah, but that's not how he got his award.
That's not even how he got the Grammy.
Okay. No. He got it for having the best spoken word album for children. He did a version of Peter and the Wolf.
He's done it all. I know he's done like a one-man show version of A Christmas Carol as well. Like he plays all the characters in A Christmas Carol. I mean, I'm sure he's no Mr. Magoo, but it's probably still pretty good.
Yeah, you can forgive us for not getting around to watching this so far without any razzleberry dressing, but
there's not a big jar of razzleberry dressing on the stage. I'm not interested. Well, that's a good one though, Cornflake. Happy birthday to Patrick Stewart.
80th birthday.
He was 80, which you wouldn't think he'd be that old. And at the same time, he's been around forever. And like, he seemed old on Star Trek The Next Generation. I think he looked older than he was. And now he looks younger than he is. he sort of stayed the same for 35 years now.
It's that Patrick Stewart magic.
Yes, yes. Good job. But, you know, we have business to take care of.
I am so ready.
Speaking of Patrick Stewart winning his Grammy Award in the 90s, we have some 90s music business to take care of. Because we got to get back to our flop fight.
Round two. Ding!
So we started this last week. Another one of our goofy flopcast tournaments. And yeah, we're doing Lilith Fair. So everybody competing in this tournament are performers from the original Lilith Fair music festivals of the late 90s. I attended one of them. Actually, in consulting with the mayor of Chickentown went to the first two Lilith Fairs, and I went to the third one. So between the two of us, we covered all three 90s Lilith Fairs.
Wow. Did she have any memorable insight to share from the two before the one that you went to?
Yeah, I think she said she saw Michelle Indigocello faint on stage.
My goodness.
So that's something. I mean, I hope she was okay.
Yeah.
I don't mean to make light of that, but that's a notable thing that happened, apparently, when the mayor went to the Lilith Fair.
Yeah, that's something you don't forget.
I guess she was exhausted or dehydrated or whatever, you know?
And these were held in the summer, right? So it was hot.
Oh, yeah. It's dangerous business. Singing, you know, with girls. Don't do it. Not worth the risk. So last week we did round one. It was crazy. And I guess we can say right now, it's not a secret, not a spoiler, the conclusion of last week's show, Dar Williams was the winner. So Dar Williams is advancing to the finals this week. But before we get back to Dar, she's standing by, pacing back and forth in the dressing room. We're going to draw out another 8 contestants from the Lilith Fair and put them through their paces and arrive at another finalist to face off with Dar Williams. All the names that we're drawing are people that either you or I have seen live in concert, either at the Lilith Fair or somewhere else. That's how I kind of narrowed down. All the potential contestants are on, their names are on little slips of paper in a coffee mug. And as usual, there are more potential players than there are slots in the tournament. So I have more than 8 names. I think I have a dozen or so names in this coffee mug right now. So not everybody's going to get to play. We don't know what's going to happen. Ready to go?
Yes, please.
Let's do this. The first name out today is Amy Mann.
We've talked a fair amount about Amy Mann on this show.
Talked about Amy last week.
Mm-hmm.
We were talking about Liz Phair and Susanna Hoffs, who faced off in round one last week. And I saw both Liz Phair and Susanna Hoffs as part of Amy Mann's crazy traveling holiday variety shows.
And we discussed Amy Mann when I was talking about my favorite albums of the 90s.
Yeah, we go way back with Amy. I was a big fan of Till Tuesday, you know, all the way back in the 80s, watching Till Tuesday on V66. Yikes, we love Amy Mann. Who do you suppose she's going up against today? Let's find out. Paula Cole.
Oh, wow.
Remember Paula Cole?
Oh, how could I forget? Where have all the cowboys gone?
Where has Paula Cole gone? She's around. I know she did a local show just within the past year or so. So Paula's still out there. I'm sure she's doing great.
Yeah. Yeah, she had those mainstream songs, I Don't Want to Wait and Where Have All the Cowboys Gone. But
yeah, she had one massive fling with mainstream success. And then, as is often the case, then you settle down, you know, after that.
Yeah, I liked her before all of that happened, though. She was on the local radio station, so I've been a fan of Paula's all along.
Yeah, yeah, and I've seen her live a couple of times. I've only seen her doing her own show once, and I think that was at the Paradise Rock Club in Boston, and that was during that era when she was really breaking into the mainstream. But then I also saw her once, for a while, she was touring with Peter Gabriel.
That is cool.
Yeah, like she was, you know, part of his band, singing backup. All right, there's Paula facing Amy. Now, the part that we didn't mention yet today is here's where it gets weird, because what we also have on other slips of paper, also completely randomized, is what's the nature of the competition? What are Amy Mann and Paula Cole going to be doing? Okay, what I have drawn, Cornflake, is the competition is riding one of those old-timey bicycles with the giant wheel in the front.
Oh, wow.
You know those crazy bikes they made like in the late 1800s or whatever? I don't know exactly what era that was.
You would see them in paintings, and I always doubted the physics of them actually working, but I'm sure that they somehow did.
Amy Mann versus Paula Cole. Let's work this out. What do you think?
The thing is, Kevin, I can't picture either of them wanting to do this, but if I was going to pick who might be better at it.
I mean, Amy's kind of goofy.
Yeah, more so than Paula Cole, for sure.
Yeah, Amy, she can seem kind of serious and scary at times. Like,
deep.
Amazing, brilliant songwriter. But then she also is very silly and goofy. I could see Amy Mann stepping up and saying, yeah, let me on that giant old-timey bike. I'll give it a shot.
Well, I think then the nod has to go to her.
All right, I'm good with that. Get Amy up on that bike. I'd like to see her get the whole band up on the bike with her. You know, like climb up on it like the Chinese acrobats, get all the members of Till Tuesday up on one giant old-timey bicycle.
That would be something.
Let's move on. Reaching back into the cup. Up next is... well, there's only 9,999 maniacs left, Cornflake, because I have drawn Natalie Merchant.
Oh, I was hoping that Natalie Merchant would come up in this. I was thinking about her today, and I was thinking, oh, will she end up in a flop fight? I sure hope so.
You're thinking about Natalie Merchant today.
I was, just for the basis of this episode.
Well, that's nice.
I want to see her take somebody else from Lilith Fair on in a flop fight, you know? It's just something I can check off the bucket list.
Here you go. Your big dream is about to come true. Yeah, Natalie Merchant, obviously originally from 10,000 Maniacs back in the 80s, and then she broke off on her own for the 90s, was very successful. I never saw her with 10,000 Maniacs. I did see her do her own solo show once in the mid-90s. Again, sort of at the peak of her powers as a solo performer. And then the rest of the Maniacs went on without her as well. They got themselves a new singer, and they're still running around out there.
Yeah, I remember that. I remember thinking it was odd to hear them with a different vocalist.
Do you still consider her a maniac?
Once a maniac, always a maniac, Kevin.
Like if Michael Cimbello were to spot Natalie Merchant walking by? Would he break into song?
Oh, yeah. Full force.
From Flashdance?
Full force Cimbello, yes.
Okay, I agree. I say Natalie is once a maniac, always a maniac, and she's up for a flop fight. Who is going to face off against Natalie Merchant? That would be... here's a new... oh, here's where it gets weird, Cornflake. I was afraid this might happen. All right, this requires a little bit of explanation.
All right, I'm ready.
Dragon Con 2019. They do a tournament at Dragon Con on the American Sci-Fi Classics track every year. They call it Sci-Fighters. Similar to what we're doing right now, a goofy tournament. And it got crazier than ever last year because they had themselves a cage match, as in Nicolas Cage. It was an entire tournament of Nicolas Cage characters.
Oh, wow.
Cage match. I was not there. I think I was needed somewhere else. I was probably off on some other track doing some other panel, so I totally missed the cage match, but people would not stop talking about it. And you can hear this thing. I think on the Needless Things podcast, you can hear audio of the cage match. Somehow, I don't remember the details, but somehow during the course of the cage match, Nicolas Cage tournament, Sarah McLachlan came up. Somehow the name Sarah McLachlan got tossed out, and they put her in the tournament. Suddenly, Sarah McLachlan was competing in the Nicolas Cage tournament.
Wow.
Things get kind of weird and silly at Dragon Con, Cornflake.
You don't say.
And the tournament went on, suddenly with a new player. And Cornflake, the winner of the cage match, was Sarah McLachlan.
I see.
Came out on top of every character ever played by Nicolas Cage in his own tournament. Your winner, in the arms of the angel, was Sarah McLachlan. And so now, here we are on the Flopcast, having our flop fight of Lilith Fair performers. And when I was throwing all the names in the cup, I thought, you know, is it not only fair to add one extra name into the mix? And there was no guarantee that I would pull this name as we go, but I just did. And thus, we have Maniac versus Maniac, because Natalie Merchant is going up against... Nicolas Cage.
Nicolas Cage who did not perform at Lilith Fair. Kevin, I had...
As far as I know, Nicolas Cage never performed at the Lilith Fair.
I had no idea where this was going because Sarah McLachlan herself came up last week.
Yes, Sarah already competed last week and lost.
So this is Nicolas Cage's chance to have a comeback?
He's got a shot. There's no guarantee he's going to win the Lilith Fair tournament the way Sarah won the Nicolas Cage tournament. But he has a shot. He's in this thing now.
Yeah, I am proud of you for giving him a fighting chance.
Well, he's all on his own at this point because now we're going to find out what are Nicolas and Natalie going to do. I've drawn another slip. Okay, Cornflake, it's the Pinewood Derby. Do you know the Pinewood Derby from Cub Scouts?
Yeah. Haven't we discussed this on the show, making the cars and making them go as fast as they can?
Yeah, you carve a little racing car out of a block of wood. I did this because I was a Cub Scout.
I have watched YouTube informational videos on how to make the best Pinewood Derby car. I've actually spent hours researching this topic, so I'm an excellent judge here.
Yeah, so you're way more up to date on this stuff than me.
It's fascinating, I tell you.
And of course, my Pinewood Derby experience, which we, if this came up on the show, we must have mentioned what I did. And that's that I carved out a little driver's seat area in my car and I put a Micronaut in it. Because I had my little toy, you know, plastic futuristic action figure dudes back then when I was a kid, the Micronauts.
Yeah, normally those cars are unleashed with no driver whatsoever and it's just chaos.
I was doing the responsible thing. By putting a little futuristic plastic robot dude in the Pinewood Derby car. It was probably a huge violation of all the rules of Pinewood Derby, but that's what I did. Natalie Merchant versus Nicolas Cage. How's this going to work?
That's an excellent question.
Now, Nicolas Cage may have been a Cub Scout in his youth. Natalie, I'm guessing, probably was not. But again, I don't know about either one of them. I'm trying to think through the Nicolas Cage filmography. If he has any, like, race car driving experience from his movies or any driving scenes in his movies.
He has that character he plays from the comic books where he's riding a motorcycle, where he's a ghost.
Oh, Ghost Rider. Good point. He was Ghost Rider, wasn't he? I didn't see those Ghost Rider movies. But yeah, a guy with a skull head that's on fire and he's driving a motorcycle. I can only think of Leaving Las Vegas, the one where he's an alcoholic, and there's a scene where he's just driving around, just taking huge gulps out of a giant vodka bottle. Natalie, well, the very first time I saw Natalie Merchant was 10,000 Maniacs music video for Peace Train. But in that music video, if I'm recalling correctly, I haven't seen it in a long time, but the band is like on a canal barge. And that's the only experience that I can recall of Natalie involving some sort of vehicle like that that I'm aware of. Now, that said, Nicolas Cage, this might be a tortoise in the hare situation, Cornflake, is what I'm saying, because Nicolas Cage, between the Ghost Rider motorcycle and the drunk driving leaving Las Vegas, I'm afraid his Pinewood Derby car might just go off the track, you know, and just explode in a fiery crash of some sort.
Yeah, Reckless doesn't win the Pinewood Derby.
And then Natalie just goes cruising along, you know?
Mm.
Ride on the peace train to victory.
Well, there you have it then. It's Natalie Merchant all the way. Sorry, Nicolas Cage.
I think Natalie is knocking Nicolas Cage out of this thing. But I suppose it's nice that he got to compete because Sarah came crashing into his tournament. All right. Let's not dwell on this. Let's pretend that didn't even happen and move on.
All right.
Up next, we have Sheryl Crow.
Well, Sheryl Crow essentially is the 90s. it's synonymous. Sheryl Crow is synonymous with the 90s.
I've seen Sheryl Crow but once, but it was at the Lilith Fair.
Most of what I know of Sheryl Crow was from the 90s. I think she had some comeback songs in the early 2000s.
Yeah, she's done all kinds of stuff for a long, long time. She was somebody that when she came out and she had her initial hit songs, the All I Want to Do Is Have Some Fun and all that stuff. And I liked it. I got the record, that first album of hers, Tuesday Night Music Club, I think it's called.
Yes.
Fun record. I like it. But she had a longevity of her career that I would not have predicted at the time, like in 1994 when she broke. But no, Sheryl stuck around, to her credit.
Yes, she did.
And now she's in a flop fight.
Who is she taking on?
Going to the mug, and it's Sheryl versus Jewel.
whoa, those Jewel. Are two heavy hitters from the early 90s.
So Jewel came out around the same time as Cheryl, and Jewel is still around as well. But I think Jewel, you really just associate with that first year or so that she was around.
For most, except the most diehard Jewel fans.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, man. I used to know some diehard Jewel fans when I was hosting my open mic night back at the Grind Coffee House back in the 90s. There were like a bunch of high school girls, and they were obsessed with Jewel. We had girls that would just come and sing Jewel songs every week.
I was guilty of being one of them, not at your coffee shop.
Not at my show.
You know. But in my own stomping grounds, I was one of them.
All right, it's Sheryl Crow versus Jewel. Let's figure out what these two ladies are up to. The competition is which one of these women would be a better Lyft driver? You need a ride, you pull out your phone, you dial up your Lyft, a car pulls up. Would you rather see Sheryl Crow or Jewel?
Depends. Are you leaving Las Vegas, or do you need someone to come and save your soul?
Wow.
Mm.
Well, it depends on the context, I suppose.
Yes.
Yeah, huh. Oh, I just thought of something.
What?
And I can't believe I forgot about this, but when Jewel broke, remember her whole story was, I used to live in my car.
Yeah, that's right.
That was like the story of Jewel. You could not get 45 seconds into a Jewel interview and she breaks out the living in my car story. That was her thing.
Mm.
So.
Maybe that really simplifies things for us here.
Do you want to listen to Jewel tell you about her living in her car for the entire ride?
Not necessarily.
Or would you throw that door open and just do a shoulder roll onto the side of the highway?
And wait for Sheryl Crow to pick you up.
Break out your phone again. Yeah, we're going to need Sheryl Crow to come pick me up. The ride with Jewel was not working out.
So you don't mind waiting a little longer for Sheryl Crow?
Absolutely not. I will stand there on the side of the road. You know, I'm all scraped up now from the tumble, from my escape from the Jewel Mobile. But I regret nothing. Cheryl's cool. She's going to come get me. I think we got to go Sheryl Crow.
Yeah.
We have two more contestants to draw out of the cup.
It's now or never, Lilith Fair girls. Let's see who it's going to be.
Here we go. We got a good one now, Cornflake. This is one of my very, very favorite singers of all time. I'm happy that we have drawn Joan Osborne.
It would have been a travesty if Joan Osborne hadn't come up.
Yeah, and I think we've talked about Joan a time or two on the show. I'm sure she's come up, and I think most people just know her hit from like 95, 96, she had, you know, her What If God Was One of Us song, and then most people never heard from her again. Joan has had a terrific career since then, you know, not selling millions of records anymore since the mid-90s, but, you know, doing what she wants, trying different things.
Wasn't the recent concert that you went to one where she covered Bob Dylan songs?
Yeah, she put out a record of just Joan covering Bob Dylan, and then for a couple of years, she was just touring doing Dylan songs. And I'm not a big Dylan guy, but man, those songs are beautiful when interpreted by someone like Joan. There's Joan in the contest. Who's she going up against? Our final contestant for the Lilith Fair flop fight shall be...
I'm on the edge of my seat here.
This is someone I don't know too much about, but I did see her at the Lilith Fair. Maybe you know her better than I do, Cornflake. Do you remember Maya? M-Y-A. She's sort of a R&B and rap kind of performer.
I'm trying to remember what I knew her from.
She was part of... What was that? Like, they took Islands in the Stream?
Oh.
And made it into, like, a rap song?
Ghetto Superstar.
Yes. I think she's a singer on that song.
Yes.
Which was kind of based musically on Islands in the Stream.
Yeah.
And the Ghetto Superstar version, I'd never heard of until it was part of a Weird Al Yankovic polka medley.
Oh, yeah.
Because it came up in the polka medley, and I thought, what's this? Why does it sound like Islands in the Stream? What's going on? I'm in touch with the kids, Cornflake, and the music of today.
I remember grooving to that song. I was always left wondering, hey, who's singing that? I didn't know it was Maya at the time.
There you go. Well, I did see Maya. And what I remember from Maya's set is that she had dancers with her. I think it might have been a guy and a girl, but a couple of people came out and just started dancing. And I was confused just because nobody else, no other act on the Lilith Fair had dancers with them. But Maya did. She was working on a whole other level than the rest of them. And also she tap danced. Like, they brought out a special, like, little floor that was mic'd because she worked some tap dancing into her act also.
That's really neat.
Talented lady, Maya. So not someone that I know too much about, but absolutely someone I saw at the Lilith Fair. And it's nice that she got to compete because everybody else in this whole tournament, I think, was so pasty white. Gotta diversify this flop fight a little bit, you know? All right, it's Joan versus Maya for our final opening round. And the competition... Okay, competition, this is simple enough. Competition is, it's a good old-fashioned staring contest. Joan Osborne and Maya, they're just going to stare at each other until somebody blinks.
This would be the toughest of calls.
And the most boring of competitions.
It's true.
Have you ever been in a staring contest?
Not one that's lasted very long. I have eyelashes that were made to be blinked, Kevin. I don't do well with staring.
You just gotta blink.
Yeah. I'm not a starer. Are you a starer?
I'm trying to remember. I don't think I've ever been in a staring contest either. I don't like looking at people. Right. What about that original video for What If God Was One of Us, Joan Osborne? There's like close-ups of her just, you know, staring straight forward at the camera, singing. You know?
Yeah.
She had that big nose ring. Remember people were freaking out, look at that girl, she has a nose ring.
I do remember people freaking out about that at the time.
Yeah, that was a big deal in 1996, evidently. We were so easily freaked out back then. But I feel like Joan's got some pretty good staring power in her.
I do too.
Yeah. I've been like front row at Joan Osborne shows. So it's possible that Joan and I accidentally have had a staring contest or two over the years. As in her mind, she's thinking, oh, there's that creep again.
Guy. So she has an intense and penetrating gaze.
Yeah.
Maya, on the other hand.
Maya.
Was she dancing around on stage with her dancers?
She has dancers. She has her special tap dancing floor. How's she going to hold still for a staring contest?
I just don't see it.
I think we got to give this one to Joan Osborne, Cornflake.
There it goes. Of all the things to win. Congratulations, Joan Osborne.
This is the highlight of her career, I'm sure, is winning an opening round in a flop fight. Because we're advancing to the next round now. Starting with Amy Mann versus Natalie Merchant. And the competition is, okay, this is that thing like from lumberjack competitions where there's a giant log like in the water and you stand on top of the log and try to kind of run back and forth as the log's rolling along, you know, without falling into the water.
Oh, yeah, log running.
Is that what you call it?
That's what I call it.
I wasn't raised by lumberjacks like you were, so, in the wilds of New Hampshire. This was business as usual for you, right? When you were a kid, that, this is how you went to school.
Right.
Like, you didn't have a bus. You had a log. You'd roll down the river.
And people would know you were lousy at it if you arrived at school wet.
That's right. Your one-room schoolhouse in Walnut Grove. All right. Amy Mann and Natalie Merchant.
Log running.
On a log. I've only done this in video game format. There's an arcade game, a video game called Timber. You're a little lumberjack, and half the game, like, you run around chopping down trees, but then it goes to a bonus round where you're trying to stay on top of a log as it spins back and forth. I'm pretty good at that, but I've never tried it in the real world.
But we've already discussed how Amy Mann seems to be the more adventurous type. I don't know if Natalie Merchant would even try.
Although we did establish that in that Peace Train video, she was out on the water.
That's true. But she wasn't, like, she was just riding along peacefully. That's a completely different experience from having to balance and steady yourself on a log.
That is very true.
You'd be hard-pressed to get me to think that Natalie Merchant could win this one.
All right. Well, I'm not going to try to talk you out of that mindset.
All right. Amy Mann takes it.
Amy Mann advancing. Let's move on to Sheryl Crow versus Joan Osborne. This is going to be a tough one, no matter what the competition is.
I'll say.
We have drawn, oh, I like this, Cornflake, Beard of Bees.
Who could have the better Beard of Bees between these two?
Yes, it's a Beard of Bees competition.
Well, I remember Sheryl Crow singing about how a change could do you good.
Yes.
And maybe that change that she was talking about was growing a beard of bees.
That's absolutely.
You'll never hear that song the same way again. All you can think of now is a beard of bees. You're welcome.
Could somebody please slap together a music video for us of Sheryl Crow? A change will do you good. But just work in a lot of footage of beards of bees, please.
Well, she does say in that song, if you'd like to reach me, leave me alone. Nothing guarantees you'll be left alone, quite like a beard of bee.
Yeah, you know, you make a good case here. Well, are you willing to go so far as to say Sheryl Crow will grow the superior beard of bees to Joan?
You betcha, yes.
Wow.
Yep.
Okay, and you know, I love Joan, but I can't argue with this flawless logic of yours. All right, that brings us to the semifinal round, which is, of course, Amy Mann versus Sheryl Crow. Okay, the competition is, well, this is from Pitfall. You know Pitfall, the video game from Activision?
Yes.
This is Pitfall jumping over alligators. You know, your little guy in Pitfall, you'd have to hop across three alligators to get across the water.
Right.
That's the competition. It's not easy. That was the hardest part of playing Pitfall. Because they'd open their mouths.
Right, they don't just sit there. They try to eat you.
So we've got Amy Mann and Sheryl Crow. They're hopping across alligators. How's this going to go down?
I mean, we've already established that Amy Mann would be the one who'd be more likely to do something wacky. So I don't see Sheryl Crow doing this.
We've been putting Amy through her paces. Amy had to ride the old-timey bike, then roll around on a log in the water. Now she's in the water again, hopping over alligators, in Pitfall form at least. Now Sheryl, less physically demanding path to the semifinals. She had to do her lift driving and then wear the beard of bees. Also, are we saying they're literally hopping on alligators in the real world, or are they playing Pitfall? How do you interpret this?
Oh, I interpreted this as they are literally out in the wild.
They're really out there. Okay, we can do that.
Yeah.
Sorry, Activision. We've stepped away from the Atari. We're actually in the jungle.
Right. Why would I think simply on this, Kevin?
Sure. Okay. This just got real.
So if you have Sheryl Crow and Amy Mann in the jungle jumping on alligators... I personally think that Amy is the one who's cut out for the job.
We're really thinning the herd for next year's Lilith Fair. They're going to have to roll a little memorial reel of here are all the performers that we lost because they were eaten by alligators since the last tour.
The tribute reel.
Yeah. They can play that horrible Sarah McLachlan song that all the dogs cry over.
Oh.
It's Amy Mann. It's Sheryl Crow. You're still giving the edge to Amy on this?
I am.
Well, fine. That puts Amy, of course, in the final round. This shall determine the ultimate winner of the Flop Fight Lilith Fair edition.
A Flop Fight Supreme.
Here comes Dar Williams. She's been resting up all week. The competition is inspired by War Games, the old Matthew Broderick movie. It's hacking into the Whopper National Defense Computer System that controls nuclear weapons.
Oh.
This is good old-fashioned 1980s computer hacking like Matt Broderick and Ally Sheedy in War Games.
Well, I mean...
Who would be better at hacking into a nuclear weapons computer system? Dar Williams, Amy Mann.
Oh, could either of them be hackers and we just don't know about it? I guess out of the two of them... I would suspect that it would be Dar, secretly a hacker, and we'd never know it from the life that she leads.
Yeah, I'm trying to picture either of them. Like, who would fit more comfortably into the Matt Broderick role in the movie? You're running around, you're sneaking into secret government installations, you're riding helicopters. That guy from Northern Exposure is very angry with everybody. And yeah, this is a tough one because they obviously these are both, you know, singer-songwriters, and they both have written very storytelling, adventurous sorts of songs on occasion. Dar, maybe more so.
So are we thinking Dar for this?
Yeah, based on essentially nothing. It sounds like we're going to go ahead and award the Lilith Fair edition of The Flop Fight to Dar Williams. Ooh, so congratulations, Dar. I'm sure she'll be thrilled. So Dar's total path to victory was she started by facing Sarah McLachlan, and the competition was who would be better at writing Bazooka Joe comic strips. Then she advanced to face the Pretenders, and the competition was playing tic-tac-toe against a chicken. She beat the Pretenders and then had to face Liz Phair, and the competition was Scrabble. That's how Dar got into the finals last week. Here she is this week, beating Amy Mann at War Games.
Wow.
There's your winner. I'm exhausted. Cornflake, please get us out of here.
Okay. Flopcast.net is our website. We highly suggest you check it out. You'll find show notes from every single one of our shows there. We're also on Facebook.com/Flopcast. On Twitter, our handle is @Flopcast. On Instagram, the_Flopcast. And please, if you would, leave us a rating or a review on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts. We'd love that. And music from the show is from the Sponge Awareness Foundation.
Those hacks. yeah, Cornflake, thanks for joining me again for another wacky flop fight.
Well, it's been the highlight of my summer.
Well, that I can believe. Under the circumstances. This was definitely the highlight of a most pathetic summer. But we'll do this again sometime, I'm sure. Everybody enjoys a good flop fight, you know?
Yes. Us especially, Kevin.
Absolutely. And again, our apologies to Nicolas Cage. Someday, buddy. Hang in there. Meanwhile, of course, you know, everybody, please be safe. Please be good. Please take care of each other. Wear your masks. Keep in touch. See you next week.
Peace and cookies.
Claire here with a special announcement. Contrary to popular belief, I didn't cancel Dr. Geek's laboratory. It fell into development purgatory thanks to MacGuffinite crystals or some such science from fiction nonsense. I've put an end to that. I locked all the staff inside the laboratory for the duration of the crisis. Now they can create 24/7 without petty distractions like home lives or free will. Look for new Dr. Geek episodes coming soon. The gay dynamics last up against the wall when the robots rise.
Oh, Cornflake, hi. It's the Secret After Show.
Hey, Kevin.
You know what we like to do for the Secret After Show after a good flop fight?
Yeah, we like to talk about who didn't quite make it into the ring.
I have fished out all the names that I did not draw out of the cup during the actual flop fight. So these are the people that never got to play. Let's run through these names really quick. We have Sean Colvin. Here's a favorite of yours, the Indigo Girls.
I am so sad that they didn't make it into this. I was holding my breath.
Oh, you would have pushed them right through to the finals. No matter who they were facing or what the competition was, you would have just been shoving them right through this thing, I'm sure.
Although I can't imagine them jumping on alligator heads. I will give you that.
They're not into Pitfall like we are. Let's see. We got Jill Sobule. We have Nico Case. The Neilds were in there. Katie Curtis. We have Letters to Cleo, as well as Kay Hanley solo. And finally, here's a weird one, but Pat Benatar.
Oh.
You don't really associate with the Lilith Fair kind of acts, but Pat did show up once or twice for Lilith Fair as well. Those are the names that were in the cup, but never got drawn. Sean Colvin, Indigo Girls, Jill Sobule, Nico Case, The Neilds, Katie Curtis, Letters to Cleo, Kay Hanley, Pat Benatar. And we like to throw them all in for like one battle royal right at the very end, you know, in the after show.
Oh, that's right.
And I do have one final competition left to crown the after show champion. The competition is installing a closet door. I picked this one because just a couple of hours ago, I installed a new closet door here in the studio.
That's how you arrived at a closet door.
Yeah, that's how it came up, is that's what I was just doing. Not very well, mind you. I'm sure any one of these Lilith Fair performers would do a better job. It's not even a real door. It's like one of those accordion-style kind of flop-out, fold-out doors.
Yeah.
That was still a massive undertaking for the likes of me. I have the carpentry skills of a raccoon. Let's say, how are your Indigo Girls at carpentry kind of projects?
Oh.
Would they take this?
Yeah, with a hammer and a nail.
Oh, there you go. All right, I don't think we have to go any farther. Congratulations to the Indigo Girls. You've won the secret after show flop fight battle royal by installing a closet door. Good job.
This has been a broadcast of the ESO Network.
Is that you slurping up water?
That's the dog.
I know somebody over there is right on the microphone.
I swear, Kevin, before we got on this recording, she took a good long drink and I thought she was going to be done for a while.
Nope. It's just, it comes through so crystal clear.
She is at least 8 feet away from me.
I struggle with the levels on Martha and Brittany every week, but man, that dog. Audio perfection.
You can tell that she's a broadcaster's dog, Kevin. She doesn't know what we're laughing at.
This has been a broadcast of the ESO Network. Be part of the crew and help support our shows by donating to our ESO Patreon or by shopping through Amazon.com or the Tee Public Store, which can all be found at ESONetwork.com. The ESO Network, your station for all things geek. Thank you.